All right, we'll call the meeting of the Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs Finance Committee to order, and the clerk will take the roll.
Representative Gentry.
Here.
Representative Welty. Representative Finstad. Representative Doty.
Here.
Representative Faust.
Here.
Representative Hamilton.
Here.
Representative Hansen. Representative Heidgerken. Representative Magnus.
Here.
Representative Olin. Representative Otremba.
It is
not. Representative Peterson. Representative Poppy.
Yes.
Representative Shemansky.
All right. The minutes from the January 30th meeting are there. Representative Faust moves approval of those minutes. Is there any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Minutes are adopted. All right, continuing our research theme, members, today we have, we're going to start off, if Mr. Martin wants to make his way down, we're going to start with the Department of Agriculture, and then we'll move into university and extension folks, and that should give us some nice background for future work on some of these things. By the way, the chair also has some bills here. If other folks have bills, feel free to bring them down to committee. It's a lot easier than tracking, running, and diving and looking for folks in the halls. I've got the Farm Z Zone that we passed a number of times through here, but never got the eye of the tax committee. We're going to try that one on again. I've got a bill here for adding 6 dairy cows to every herd through RFA. And then you heard the soybean growers yesterday talk about the checkoff bill. That was one where former Representative Blaine and I sat on that, if you remember, and the fertilizer checkoff for fertility research, refundable checkoff. I have that here also. So if anyone's interested in those bills, by all means, sign on. I'll just pass them around. Mr. Martin, we apologize for taking your time yesterday, but I'm sure you found it interesting to sit in the audience anyway, I would suspect. And we do try and get folks on, but I know you are here, and we appreciate you waiting till this morning. But as promised, you're here front and center, and I guess the committee certainly is curious to hear about your views on research, what the department's doing, what they hope to do, and what we should be looking at as a committee and helping you fund and helping you work maybe with the university and some of those collaboratives. So introduce yourself for the tape, and we'll go from there.
Sounds good. No problem coming back. I think it was a really interesting testimony yesterday here from all the groups on the research priorities. Thank you, Chairman Junkie, committee members. For the record, my name is Joe Martin. I currently serve as Assistant Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. I believe yesterday it was distributing your packets, a copy of my testimony, along with some detailed research projects that the department has been collaborating on. Before I go into detail about just a few of the research projects that the department's involved with, I think it's important to start from the premise that the department doesn't necessarily have a lot of dedicated personnel that are involved in research per se. Rather, the department has served the role as a facilitator and collaborator on research projects with a variety of partners. Primarily the University of Minnesota, grower organizations, and other units of government. In other words, the MDA usually serves the role of identifying some priority research concerns out there and may help identify sources of funding, may work with the legislature or LCCMR or EPA or others, or find other sources of funding for research, and then help maybe set up the contracts and pay the research institutions, monitor the work, and disseminate the information to rural Minnesota. With that said, I think you can look at the research efforts that are involved with sort of break down into 5 categories. Probably the biggest is fertilizer and pesticide usage and its impact on water quality. There's a lot of water quality type of research we're involved with. We're also working on some livestock-related research, weed and pest control type research, sustainable and organic projects, and food safety. I'd also say, I know yesterday there was a lot of talk of renewables. The department hasn't been heavily involved in renewable research, with the exception that we received some dollars from the legislature for E20 type of usability and drivability research that we've done some grants on with the university and Minsky system. Like I said, you should have that comprehensive document in front of you. I'm just going to go over a few things.
I don't know if everyone has it or not. It was distributed yesterday, so I'm not sure if everyone has your stuff or not. I got one, but I don't know if other members have. You're talking about the testimony?
Yeah.
Okay. So, members, if you don't have it, we can get some copies made. Looks like you're finding it. All right. Please proceed.
Probably the biggest research effort that is directly related to the legislature is last year via the Clean Water Legacy Act. $800,000 was appropriated to the department to engage in several research projects that are targeted towards helping inform the TMDL decision-making process, especially when it comes to agriculture's contribution. Over this last year, we've gone out, we've identified some priority research areas, and then have actually went and contracted three separate projects with the university. Briefly, what those three projects are going to be is looking at using more precise modeling to more accurately account for load allocations for agriculture practices. That's differences between usage of models that and their accuracy. Also working on DNA fingerprinting of fecal bacteria for domesticated cattle, swine, and poultry, which will help in identifying load allocations for fecal coliform impairments, and also the use of LIDAR imaging, which is sort of the next generation of GIS, where we can identify areas on the landscape that may be contributing a large amount of sediment to a watershed. So it's looking at a more targeted approach. We're also working with some grower organizations and trying to identify some working plots, partner with some producers in impaired watersheds for nutrient usage in impaired watersheds to see what better practices might lead to reduced loadings. Outside of the Clean Water Legacy projects, some more high-profile, I'd say, research we're involved with is related to drainage. Via a lot of partners, the university, grower organizations, the Ag Drainage Management Coalition, and units of government, and from sources of funding ranging from the legislature to the USDA to other units of government, we've established several conservation drainage related research efforts. Some of these are going on at the U of M outreach centers. Some are taking place on working farms. And then also we've long-term had the Red Top Farm demonstration site that is down in Nicollet County that is working on looking at samples out of drain tile and fertilizer and pesticide practices. And I would volunteer if any of you are interested in seeing any of these research projects. We can certainly identify a time for you to see them. I'd probably suggest not this time of the year. It might be a little cold. I think with that, I'll conclude my testimony and stand for any questions now or later.
Thank you for coming, Mr. Martin. And certainly I think there are some line items in your budget for some of these activities to continue. And so we will be able to discuss them further, particularly as it pertains to them. Anyone have any questions for the department at this time? All right. Thank you. And we'll get the university up here. Dr. Levine, I think, is going to start us out. And whoever you want to bring to the table with you. Okay. Dr. Levine's and Durgan, welcome to the committee for the first time, I believe. It's first time to this committee as in your new role as the dean of the University of Minnesota College of, you can tell us a new name. I won't muck it up right now. But we appreciate you being here. I think you understand what we're up to. This committee intends to take a broad look at the research being done both at the experiment stations and extension as well as the College of Agriculture. Confirming at breakfast again with my roommate, Representative Rukavina, this morning. He's pleased that we're working on the ag special over here And again, we intend to write it and hopefully have Representative Welty and Poppy and others who sit over on the Higher Ed Committee bring that over to him for insertion into his budget, which I think is good. If you have reviewed the last few years, I think we've gotten less and less specific on that money and more general. And I think with all that's going on in this state, whether it's renewable energy or whether it's production agriculture needs or the clean water things and all such matters, I think it does behoove us to have this discussion and really understand between us what's needed and how we can best go about funding it and participating with you as a legislature and making sure those needs are met. And certainly I think that's what the committee feels here too. And so we're going to give that a whirl this year and see how it works. And from what I've heard and seen around the state, you're getting good reception as you travel, and we appreciate the new eyes and ears that you folks are bringing to this. And we'll try and put aside some of the turmoil we've seen the last few years and move ahead in a positive direction. So with that, I'll let you proceed in any way you wish, and then we'll move down through some of the other folks that are here to talk about what's going on at the university. By the way, I will ask this too before you even get going. We'd like to have your finance people kind of give us a breakdown of the last biennial ag special and where those monies were spent over at the university. As I say, it wasn't specific when it was given to you, but I'm sure you've tracked it the last couple of years, and you can kind of give us an accounting of those dollars and, you know, how much went to what department and what research activities, how much went to turn on the lights and, run the water faucet. So we want to know all that. So with that, again, welcome, and please proceed. Introduce yourself for the tape, by the way, too.
Mr. Chair and committee, my name is Bev Durgan. I'm Dean of Minnesota Extension and also Director of the Minnesota Agricultural Experiment Station. What we plan to do today is to first talk a little bit about the agricultural research and extension and teaching that is being conducted in three units within the university, one within the College of Food, Agricultural, and Natural Resource Sciences, and we have Dr. Al Levine here to talk about that, and then Dr. Jeff Klausner, who is the Dean of the College of Veterinary Medicine. So we would like to just overview our, and then I will overview the applied research and extension done at the University of Minnesota Extension. Then we have three faculty from our colleges that would like to discuss some of their research to give you an idea of how research is conducted and extended in Minnesota. Then we also have our finance officers, Richard Fitzenreiter and also Julie Connison, that are here that could give you the budget overview. So that's our proposal of how we would like to address the committee today. If that is okay with you, we will proceed.
That's fine. You got an hour and 10 minutes to use in any way you see fit.
Okay, great. And again, as I said, we would like to give you an overview of the three units within the University of Minnesota that are primarily responsible for the agricultural research, teaching, and extension mission within the university. And with me today is Al Levine and Jeff Klausner. As many of you have heard yesterday with the testimony of many of the agricultural groups, is that the University of Minnesota research has been driving agriculture and will continue to drive agriculture. It's very important for our agricultural industries and business and our growers within the state. We conduct research that solves problems, develops new ideas, and really supports the agricultural enterprise of the state. And in doing this, we work cooperatively with the ag groups, the Department of Agriculture, agribusinesses, and the producers within the state. You heard yesterday, I think, from at least a number of the ag groups that we as deans have been meeting with 22 agricultural commodity groups over this last year, talking about some of the issues, the priorities that they have, and also some of the research that we're doing within the University of Minnesota. We feel that these conversations have, we've learned a lot from each other, and that we are going to continue to have these conversations. The agricultural state special, which funds both research and extension, as you know, is very important to the mission of our work. And in fact, it provides the core funding for our faculty to conduct research and extension in the state. For example, as we'll talk when we talk about the budget, over 80% of the faculty in the College of Food, Agricultural, and Natural Resource Sciences have at least part of their salaries paid from the Ag State Special. So it's a very important part of what we do and gives us the core funding for to allow our faculty to really solve some of the problems that we'll be talking about today. So again, we'd like to give a short overview of our units. Then we'll have three faculty members, Dr. Dave Ragsdale, Dr. Greg Cuomo, and Dr. Peter Davies, discuss their research with you. So with that, Dr. Alavine will start first to talk about the College of Food, Agricultural, and Natural Resource Sciences.
Thank you. Dr. Levine?
Mr. Chair, members, guests, I'm Alan Levine, affectionately known as Al.
That's a good thing.
It's a good thing. Dean of the College of Food, Agricultural, and Natural Resource Sciences, CFANS. Okay. Our mission, our real goal in this college is to address everyday problems. We talk about solution-driven science. So what we're trying to use is the most modern techniques that are available to us, just like you would want to use the most modern techniques on your computer, to address those problems that every person who's interested in agriculture faces every day. And we spend a lot of our effort, a lot of our dollars, a lot of our education capital moving in that direction. One of the areas I'll just start with is in terms of, you've heard a lot about biofuels. It's a hot topic. We want to talk about agriculture in a big way now. The area of biofuels, we do a great deal of research in our university and in our college. In the Department of Energy grant that just went in, there were 27 investigators from our college involved in that request for $125 million. We have leaders out in our outreach centers doing work. You're familiar, I'm sure, with the wind turbine out at Morris at our West Central Research and Outreach Center. It provides a model for community involvement and implementation of these kinds of renewable energy sources. Biorefining is being worked at in detail in our Grand Rapids, our North Central Regional Outreach Center. In our Southern Research Outreach Center in Waseca, we do biomass crops for combustion and cellulosic ethanol. And also in Morris, there's work going on with DDGSs. An area of interest, I know a lot of folks are wondering what's going to happen with those products. We're working on how you deal with these, better nutritional value associated with them. Our research base is very broad-based. In this new college, we have environmental sciences, natural resources, and agriculture, as well as food. In the food arena, we have a lot of expertise in the area of food safety. We work on everything from the pre-harvest to post-harvest. E. coli 0157 is an area of interest to us. We're involved in the Homeland Security Grant, a very large, multidisciplinary grant looking at the food supply and the safety of the food supply, not only from microorganisms, but from tampering in other ways. We make a difference. We work, for example, in ensuring that the beef producers have the tools available to produce the highest quality beef available to compete on an international market. Our work at the North Central Research and Outreach Center does leading work in the nation in reproductive research associated with beef and dairy products. So we do a lot of very practical research. If we have basic science going on, which we do, of course, those basic science tools are used to apply to new problems, either in terms of cropping or other issues that are very important to us, agronomics. Human capital, everyone is interested in. We train a lot of students. The next generation of leaders come from our college, we hope and we trust. For example, Kyla Peterson and five others of the six Minnesota FFA officers are U of M students, so we're heavily involved in that. Our top dairy judges, Luke Olson won the first prize in the National Collegiate Contest at the World Dairy Expo. We also are involved in 4-H Poultry and Egg Conference, Crops College in Crookston. We were involved in that in the Northwest Regional Outreach Center as well. I should also mention, you hear a lot about student numbers. Our college numbers, our undergraduate numbers, are in fact increasing. They are not decreasing. Over the last 5 years, we've had significant increases. In 2003, we were just over 1,600, and we're approaching 1,800 in 2006. Easily, 50% of our students are working in production or production-related majors, ranging from animal science, fisheries and wildlife, all the way through to food science. The good news that I'd like to mention in closing before I pass it on to our next dean is that when we had a student survey recently, respondents at our campus career center, we found out that 98% of our students were employed or pursuing further education, that 90% were satisfied with their employment, and 75% found their first jobs here in Minnesota, so we're keeping them. 60% of them were employed directly in the fields that were related to their majors. So our job is to work with the public in the needs of the land-grant institution and to educate and to serve, and I trust that we're doing that. Thank you.
Dr. Levine, you mentioned the number of undergraduates. Do you also have the number of graduate student numbers for those same periods of time? Again, one of the concerns we've heard, from a production agriculture side, mainly that we don't have the entomology or soil science or agronomy type undergrads that we used to see back when I was there and beyond, and that's a concern of a lot of the ag business and other entities out there. Can you comment on the graduate programs over there and where those numbers are at?
We have about 800 graduate students. The graduate student numbers have been fairly flat. There hasn't been a decrease, but there hasn't been a major change. So over the last 4 or 5 years, it's been around the same.
As we explore this, you can kind of break into how many of those are production-related as opposed to 10 or 15 years ago and where we're at. Can we explore, not today you don't have numbers, but we can explore that
absolutely.
As we go forward?
Sure.
All right. Representative Heigerkin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, good to see you folks, and I know we've had some issues in the past. I know a number of years ago when the University of Minnesota decided to do the extension cuts, and I found out about it as I was in Glenwood, and some folks came up to me and said, they're closing our office over here. And I had no realization of it, and nothing ever came through Ag Committee, or we had no knowledge of it. And I think, Representative Junkie, you remember that as well. We were quite irate about it. And there were some serious cuts made to the ag-related industries. Within my area, the dairy area, the livestock area, we lost a number of folks that were never replaced. And I then had a feeling that the commitment to the University of Minnesota that has been there to agriculture since day one, I thought that the university was starting to go the other way. It's good to see that I know within the rural Minnesota that within the education department we've done some things to help of vocational ag. Last year we passed a bill allowing the ag teachers, Representative Junkie, to be able to teach some of the science fields because they're, you know, and that helps preserve some of those ag programs within the school systems. But with that said, I know that within the pipeline there is a big grant going forward for a new research center. And I relayed interest, Representative Peterson. We have, I would like to see Morris come into play in this, being that it's a great outreach center and we have all the ag products available out there. And it would be nice to see one of those research facilities go out in the outstate Minnesota where agriculture is, rather than coming to Minneapolis where there is no agriculture. But with that in mind, I just... A couple comments, and I know it's hard to answer. Basically, it's not a question, more of a comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Dr. Levine, maybe you could comment a little more on the, we've been hearing about the $125 million grant application. I think it's a multiple college regional application, and we're in competition, I want to say, with Michigan is one group, and Harvard and the East Coast is one, and California, and they're going to give out two of these, is that right? And maybe you can just update us so we all have... similar database here.
Mr. Chair, members, yes, the DOE grant that we're going in on is mostly Minnesota, University of Minnesota. We have some relationship with a few other universities, small relationships. There are many competitors here. We've heard 70 different grants are coming in for those two $125 million grants. The great competition that we know about is Harvard and MIT together on the East Coast. On the West Coast, Lawrence Livermore and Berkeley and Stanford going in together. in the Midwest, Michigan State, Purdue, Iowa. I think those are the relationships. So there's a great deal of competition out there. But it's multidisciplinary in our university. The College of Biological Sciences has around 19 investigators involved in this. Institute of Technology, 11. We have 27. The MinSCU system has some folks involved in this. So it's across the state.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair Junke and Dean Levine and R. Dean Durgan. A question about basic agronomic research on native grasses or native legumes, native plants. We're hearing a lot about bioenergy, biofuels, and my question just is there a need for additional research just on yield, term, any type of basic horticultural or agronomic research on whether it's yellow coneflower or big blue stem? Just your response to that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, I would say yes, there's a great need because the experimental data that was based on Dave Tillman's work was done at Cedar Creek on a small plot of land. We need to find out how we can upscale that, how it's going to happen, what kind of mixed prairie grasses can grow, where they're going to grow. So there are definitely needs to fund research along the lines of looking at land growth for these crops.
Chair, Representative Hansen. The research that has been conducted on native prairies and establishing native prairies, a lot of that work was done in the 80s during the establishment of some of the CRP acres. And the establishment of CRP was very different than the establishment of trying to use these crops for production. And so there is a great need. There, we do have some work being conducted with our plant breeders looking at some of the native grasses. The grass seed industry in northern Minnesota is now producing a number of these native grasses seed, but the issue of really scaling up this work and establishing these native stands and then also just determining how to harvest them, that work just needs to be done. And there's some work being done in North Dakota at an ARS facility on improved lines of some of these native grasses, but really not production. There's not much of that work at all being done in the U.S. right now.
Okay. Dean Klausner, you're sitting there patiently. Welcome to the committee. Introduce yourself for the tape and proceed.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Jeff Klausner. I'm Dean of the College of Veterinary Medicine, and thank you very much for the invitation to talk about the research at the College of Veterinary Medicine. College of Vet Med was formed in 1947 by the Minnesota Legislature, and I think it was formed to help turn Minnesota into an agricultural powerhouse. And I think the college has been an important player ever since 1947 in animal agriculture in Minnesota. Of course, our mission is to improve the health of people and the health of animals in Minnesota. We did a quick survey. I often ask this as a question, but I won't ask you guys this question. We did a quick survey trying to add up the number of animals that there are in Minnesota, at least the countable animals. So the chickens, the turkeys, the deer, the dogs, the cats, we didn't count the guinea pigs and the squirrels and all that. We estimate that there are over 80 million animals in Minnesota. And so the College of Veterinary Medicine is very important in the health of all those 80 million animals. Our mission, again, is to improve the health and well-being of animals and people. And we do that through our teaching, research, and service efforts. We graduate approximately 90 veterinarians every year who go out and work in rural communities, who work in the metropolitan area. And overall, 80% of all the veterinarians in the state graduated from the University of Minnesota. We do research on a variety of areas, and that's what I'm going to focus on today. I'm going to tell you a little about some of the infectious disease issues that we're dealing with and just give you a little bit of an overview of what our current research is in some of those areas. And, of course, we provide service. We run, as I'll mention again, a diagnostic laboratory, which is very much like the health department's lab on the human side, except the diagnostic lab in the College of Vet Med at the University of Minnesota provides all the disease surveillance for Minnesota related to animal populations. So it's a very important part of the health loop of animals in Minnesota. But I'm going to talk, give you a few specifics, and I'm not going to get into obviously great detail about these diseases, but just to give you a sense of some of the things that we're working on. I'm going to talk a little about Yoni's disease, a little about mastitis, the porcine reproductive and respiratory syndrome, say a few words about bovine tuberculosis, since that's an important issue. I have a faculty member, Peter Davies, who's going to talk about circovirus, which is a disease which is getting started in Minnesota, and we need to jump right on. And then, of course, avian influenza. So we'll go through a few. So Yoni's disease, how many, does everybody know, you know what Yoni's disease is? Okay, so Yoni's disease is a bacterial disease, especially important in dairy cattle. It's been estimated in Minnesota that over 25% of cattle have this disease. It causes significant, not so much mortality, but morbidity, loss of function in dairy cattle. And there is a large national effort going on right now to get rid of this disease in the United States. The College of Veterinary Medicine is leading a research project that spans over 30 universities and some state agencies to get rid of this, to actually get rid of the disease. We are working in Minnesota specifically to figure out how the disease is transmitted from one cow to another. There's a lot of suggestion that most of the transmission of this disease occurs at a very young age. So we're looking at colostrum, you know, the milk that's fed to young cattle. We're looking at how cattle are housed together. And we're looking at the relationship in farms that house heifers on their farms and those that don't. And through this work, what we intend to do, of course, is to rid Minnesota and hopefully the United States of this disease. We're trying to identify control strategies. We're trying to improve the health of cattle. And, of course, this is also potentially a human health issue, since there's some concern that the Yoni's organism may cause disease in people. But it's an example of a lot of the work that we do at the College of Vet Med, where it's multidisciplinary. It often, we work with organizations in multiple universities around the country, and the funding for it comes from some from the Minnesota legislature through the Rapid Agricultural Response Fund and some through the USDA through CSRES. Mm-hmm. Mastitis is an important disease problem of dairy cattle in Minnesota.
Excuse me.
Yes.
Representative Heider. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Thank you. Again, on the Yoni's disease, I want to congratulate you on the grant that you got, I know a research grant here a couple years ago. And I know within my district there were a lot of people, and I was there when they did the testing. There used to be some funding for folks that did the testing and et cetera, et cetera. And they relayed, I know last summer, I was out one of the ranchers out there, and they said that they got cut. And can you explain, and I was not aware of that there was any cut, and then it may have been something that we've done at the state legislature as well.
Dr. Claus.
Representative Heider, I'm not familiar with all the details. There was a funding cut to the Board of Animal Health that decreased their ability to do as much testing as they've done in the past. But I think, you know, the answer to that question would probably be best directed to the Board of Animal Health.
Okay.
Thank you. Mastitis, of course, is an important disease problem in dairy cattle. And what we've done in mastitis is a very simple but very important. Faculty at the College of Veterinary Medicine have developed a new culture method that allows them to do on-farm diagnostics of and identify mastitis. And why that's so important is not all mastitis is caused by bacteria. So it's really important that you identify early on whether it's bacteria and what those bacteria are. If it's non-bacterial, you don't need to use antibiotics, and we can reduce antibiotic use in cattle. If it is bacteria, you need to figure out what those bacteria are and then use the appropriate antibiotics. So it's just the kind of fundamental research that is going on at the college. And that funding the money for that came from the experiment station almost solely. The porcine reproductive and respiratory syndrome is really a devastating disease to Minnesota swine producers. I know you saw yesterday a list of funding from the Minnesota pork producers to the University of Minnesota, and there's an awful lot of that funding that's been used for this very deadly disease. Just like with Yone's disease, the University of Minnesota is leading a national effort to get rid of this disease in the United States. Locally, we're using GIS systems to map out where the disease is, and we're really focusing on how the disease gets spread from one farm to another. So it's, again, a very important disease. Avian pneumovirus, a disease of turkeys. This was a significant disease in the turkey industry, causing almost $25 million of loss a year. Started about 6 years ago now. We've been working on that, but the difficulty with this disease, and maybe it shows why the experiment station funding is so important, is that this disease was really nowhere else in the United States, so there wasn't much interest in funding avian pneumovirus research except here at the University of Minnesota. We mapped the gene sequence, we developed diagnostic tests, and eventually developed a vaccine, and the disease is still here, but under better control. And then bovine tuberculosis, I'll mention very briefly. This you'll probably hear about, and again, you may want to talk to the Board of Animal Health, because this is really, I think, a very significant problem now in Minnesota. I think we were hoping that it would not be as significant as it's turned out to be. There are 7 herds in the northwestern part of the state that are now infected with bovine TB. The state has lost its bovine TB free status, which it had since 1971. That restricts the movement of cattle. It has significant economic impact. And then the other thing that's very concerning is we're beginning to find the disease more and more in white-tailed deer. And many of you may know that in Michigan, there has been TB for a long time in the deer population. It spread to the cattle population, and it's very difficult to get rid of if it's in the deer population. So this is where the diagnostic lab at the University of Minnesota comes in.
Excuse me, Dr. Claus and Representative Heiger.
Thank you again. I find this discussion this morning very interesting. In regards to the bovine, the TB, has the DNR still been doing the CWT testing as they were doing previously? Keeping a handle on it, do you know?
Representative Heiger, The CWD testing has wound down. We're not doing as much of that as we had done in the past. Now we are doing a lot of TB testing. Although this past year, they still looked at both diseases. But you know, we have not found CWD in any deer in Minnesota to this point.
Okay.
Thank
you, Mr. Chair. Funding, I know that's been a problem, especially in this area. Have we accessed funds enough to handle the problem? I realize I think it's more up in Representative Marquardt's district, but I guess Representative Otremba, there's a couple herds up in your district as well. But is there a funding mechanism to take care of this? Do we need more funding? I realize it, and a lot of you don't realize that your department used to be part of the Department of Agriculture. I remember Dr. Hartman, I think it was, coming down here and pleading his cause for a separate entity. Has this been working out well as a separate entity, and is there enough of a money funding mechanism for this problem?
Dr. Claus?
Representative Heiter. At the moment, I think there is enough funding. There's quite a bit of USDA funding that's coming to Minnesota to deal with this problem. But again, on the specific control issues, I would suggest that you talk to the Board of Animal Health and ask them what their needs are as we deal with this very important disease in Minnesota.
And members, we certainly will be doing that. We oversee that budget, and we will have them in and talk about what their needs are. And bovine TB is very serious right now in the state, up in Olin's district and others, so we're going to really focus on that. Some more for us?
Committee Chair, just very briefly, we're testing 150,000 cattle at the University of Minnesota in the diagnostic lab, again, demonstrating the importance of that lab to Minnesota. We're also planning to test 5,000 white-tailed deer, and we're in the process of doing that right now. I would just mention, again, the university's it was discussion about the university's commitment to agriculture. The University of Minnesota has invested almost $3 million in a chemical digester system so that we can get rid of animal waste, especially from animals with TB or animals that might have mad cow disease. Fortunately, we haven't had that, or birds with avian influenza. So that's up and running and just really an important part of our disease control mechanism in Minnesota. And I'm going to finish up, just say a few words about avian influenza. We are still concerned about that disease. The communicators at the University of Minnesota have been working with communication professionals in all the state agencies in the county to develop common communication messages so that if AI, the pathogenic human form, should come to Minnesota or the United States, we would have information, consistent information for people who would need to know. Another example of what the University of Minnesota has done, this past year they've invested $2.5 million of university funds in a high isolation necropsy facility. And that will allow us, you know, we don't know whether a turkey or a goose would have AI, but it allows us, if there's a suspicion of that, to do a necropsy, it's like an autopsy, without exposing human beings to that disease. So, again, I want to thank the legislature for the $300,000 last year that was invested in Wilmer, in the poultry testing laboratory. We're doing lots. We did a huge number of tests this year, and, of course, they've all come back negative. Thank you very much.
Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chairman, a couple of questions. Dean, in the College of Vet Medicine, your out-of-state students that come in, what is the ratio of admissions from out-of-state students to in-state students in the vet medicine program?
Dr. Klausner.
Representative Solberg, at present we take 60% of our students from Minnesota and 40% from out of state.
Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chair, Dr. Cross, is that, wasn't there some controversy a few years ago about the admission standards, particularly as it relates to your relationship with Wisconsin students coming in?
Dr. Klausner.
Mm-hmm. Representative Solberg, not quite sure what you're referring to. In probably 20 years ago now, there was, Minnesota used to have an agreement with Wisconsin. We took 12 students into veterinary medicine every year from Wisconsin. The goal had been for Minnesota and Wisconsin to develop a regional school together. And because of political forces in Wisconsin, that never happened, and Wisconsin ended up developing their own veterinary school.
So, Mr. Chair, that is the relationship that you have, particularly with Wisconsin, is no longer in place. Is that correct?
Dr. Klausner?
Representative Solberg, that's true.
One other thing then. Mr. Chair, and you mentioned a couple of times of the laboratories at the University of Minnesota and your testing. And we established also in the state a very expensive lab down on the, with the Department of Agriculture. And one of the reasons for the expensive lab being located with the Department of Agriculture was, and I think there is even a request coming in again for an isolation part of the lab. And you mentioned your testimony also, your ability at the university to have some isolation testing, doing autopsies and so forth in a very confined and secure system. I guess my concern is, or my question is, what kind of cooperation do we have between the University of Minnesota and the Agricultural Department on the testing and the lab work? It seems to be, as I listened to the testimony, a kind of a duplication of efforts, and the justification for the very expensive lab on a very expensive piece of property called the Capital Area was that we needed to have this lab so that agriculture and everybody else could work together. We seem to be having that not the case. And in fact, as I see in the budget, the recommendation, an increase in rent charges of nearly $1 million for the lab down in the Capital Area. So I guess my question is, you know, what kind of relationship do we have between your labs and, you know, the ag labs,
if any?
Representative Solberg, I'm very glad you asked that question. One of the things I didn't mention, is really my last slide here, is we're lucky to be in a state where there is very good cooperation between University of Minnesota and state agencies, and that doesn't happen everywhere. So the necropsy lab that I referred to that the university is building right now at the University of Minnesota, that's a lab to do autopsies. And that's a lab that would be used by the state if there were an outbreak of disease. You actually, you know, cut the animals open and take tissues out of them. That's very different than the laboratories in the Department of Health and the Department of Agriculture building. Those are laboratories where whole animals do not enter those facilities. That's where, you know, you study disease in a test tube. And the unique thing about what's happened here in Minnesota is in the Department of Ag, Department of Health laboratories now, they have retrofitted a lab that's a high isolation laboratory that would be used if there were, you know, a disease like avian influenza that came to Minnesota. And the Department of Health, excuse me, the Department of Ag and the University of Minnesota have agreed to use that lab together. So the Department of Ag and the Department of Health don't need this lab unless there is a disease outbreak in Minnesota. During these periods of time when it's not needed by the state, the University of Minnesota will use this lab to do basic research on infectious diseases. So it's an example of a partnership that I don't think exists anywhere else in the United States, where the Department of Ag, the Department of Health, and the University of Minnesota are actually going to share space to use it fully. And so it's a great example of us working together. And again, very few other examples of that. The University of Minnesota is poised right now, and we're on the cusp of getting a major program project grant from the NIH in avian influenza. And if we get that grant, we'll be utilizing that laboratory, and again, right there in the Department of Health, Department of Ag building.
Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chairman, this is a cynical comment, I understand. But it's interesting that the University of Minnesota can come to the Capital Area to use a lab, and in the process of developing a lab on the most expensive piece of property we got, for the standards that we had to build to the Capital Area, the standards of exterior, that the Agricultural Department could not go to the University of Minnesota, where, in my opinion, the lab would have been much better located. But that was a comment.
And thank you, Rep.
Water over the dam.
I guess I have a few more specific questions, too, to any or all of you folks. Umore Park came up yesterday. We're all, those of us that were here last year understood the sale of that or the transfer of that to another usage, and there's some concern, Dr. Klausner, that that is the only turkey research facility that the university has in the state, and we haven't heard any plans on how that might be replaced, or is it going to be retained, or is it going to be relocated. And then I think the same concern applies to some of the production agriculture test plots and other things that are down there. What are the plans if Umore Park moves to different ownership now and the production agriculture research that's going on at this point down there? Or are there plans yet for that? You all can flip a coin if you want to take that one.
Mr. Chair? We do have Dr. Greg Cuomo, who's the Director of Operations of Umore Park, in the audience, and he can address some of those questions if you would like him to.
Okay.
But also, as in reference to the turkey facilities and the animal facilities at Umore Park, now that the plans are more concrete about what is going to happen with that facility, that we are meeting now with Greg Cuomo and the industry to talk about the possible replacement of those facilities and where they might be. With the plant agriculture and the research plots there, that we feel that we can accommodate much of that research in the area that we are partnering with DNR and moving some of those areas. But also, we need to be talking about where those are going to go. So those conversations are now happening now that we have a better understanding of where that facility is going. But if you'd like to ask additional questions to Dr. Cuomo, he is here.
Okay, he'll be up in a little bit. Another specific question to one or all of you. As we talk about renewable energy again and try and look at research needs out into the future, what is the school doing? What are research doing? We heard yesterday that there's two ways for this new cellulosic ethanol. One is enzymatic breakdown and enzymatic research, and the other one is thermochemical breakdown and processing of those plants for energy. Which direction is you going on that? Have you started focusing research in the last year or two as this has come on board on either or both of those? And what are your projected needs for that type of research?
Mr. Chairman, the engineering group in our college department, BBE, Biosystems Biofuel, I can't remember now. It's BBE.
BBE.
BBE, we'll go with that, like CFANS. They are spending a great deal of time organizing around these efforts. And so the cellulosic issue, as well as lignins, and taking a look at how that's going to be done, as well as black liquor from the pulp and paper industry, is all being worked in our college across all of those areas. And in collaboration with some of the folks in IT, this work is going forward.
And Dr. Levine, the personnel involved, resources, do you see those as adequate, or should we be maybe putting a focus on some of those areas at this point as, again, it transitions? And I'm glad you brought up wood products, because I know there's been some people in my office looking for some money to start exploring energy production with those wood products up north also, ethanol and other things, and we certainly want to have those folks participating too. But how is the research going? I mean, are we light on resources there? I mean, I suspect we're just starting to gear up in that. And certainly with what's going on federally, and I think there's going to be a big push for research federally with Colin Peterson, Congressman Peterson's bill coming out. And certainly I think here at the state level, I mean, we want to focus on your needs in that area, I think, almost pinpoint where we're going and what we need to be a leader in that here in the upper Midwest, and not have to just follow others. As, you know, we hear about a cellulosic plant being applied for. The money has not been granted yet, but in Iowa. And, you know, is Iowa getting a better look because their research is ahead of ours in that college, or you know, why are they choosing to go to Iowa rather than Minnesota? And, you know, those are the things that concern us here.
Mr. Chair, there's a lot of resources that are being put into that direction within the college, throughout the university. Of course, we need more funds in that area, and people are applying for grant funds. The university has dedicated $1.5 million towards this issue from central pools of money being put into the Institute on the Environment that IRE will be involved in, that we will as a college be involved in. Our college, when I negotiated, got some recurring funds for investments, and so we have a small amount of money, $100,000, that's focused on an effort around that as well. So we have about $1.6 million directly focused of new monies that are targeting that.
And one last question. I have a few other members here that want to weigh in. We heard also yesterday about the need, particularly at the university, for industrial experts. Not just the chemists and the others, but industrial experts, ag engineers and others, not only in research end, but also in education, as we see more and more plants and more facilities, both large and small energy projects coming on board. It appears there's a lack of resources within our own school from that industrial type research and education end. And then Representative Hansen brought up also, which I thought was a good point, you know, the research we need, basic field research on some of these crops. How do you move that feedstock into the plants where they're going to utilize it? And I bring up an example, which I just learned this weekend at a seminar I was at, that, for example, out west in Oregon, they grow a lot of grass seed. And they take the stover from that grass seed and bale it. But Japan wants that stover for their uses across the ocean. And what they do is it can actually take, I believe, three or four of those bales and compress them in a machine into the size of one single bale. They put them in the overseas containers and ship them to Japan in a more economical way. Certainly that's something that popped up in my mind as we start talking about shipping these cellulosic crops, whether it's corn stover or soybeans or switchgrass or prairie grasses. But again, my thoughts are, who do we have working on these types of systems for efficiently moving these feedstocks to the plants, or do we? Is that something we should be addressing here with some increased funding to the university on, in this type of arena? Again, both research-wise and educating our undergraduates and graduate students to help us in the next 10, 15, 20 years when we see a lot of this hopefully coming on board.
Chair, thanks for that comment. It's true, there's a lot of developmental work in education and in research that has to be done. As I said, it's going across the university. Our college is particularly well suited to be discussing the agricultural engineering piece of moving this, these materials around, how we deal with them in terms of transport, and that's an area that we're moving into. So we've been in that business for a while, but now our engineering group, we combine two departments. They have a lot of strength behind them, and they're working along with the Institute of Technology. So I'm confident that we're going in the right direction. You have to think ahead on this one. It's moving very rapidly.
But again, Dr. Levine, is there a specific focus at this point on those new technologies coming down the pike that we're literally seeing? Or is it literally something you have not quite moved into yet?
No, we have several scientists. Roger Ruin has been working in this area in BBE, Mr. Chair. So there are specific programs that are currently going on, and we're developing new ones.
Representative Doty.
Thank you, Chairman. Switch gears a little bit, back to Dr. Klausner. Many of the dairy farmers in my district say that it's taking a lot longer to find a large animal vet these days. Could you give us a little information? What percent of your graduates stay in Minnesota, and how are we doing for large animal vets? What's going to happen in the next couple of years?
Dr. Klausner?
Mr. Chair, Representative Elder, that's an excellent question. There has been a shift in the last 20 years in veterinary medicine. It used to be that young men grew up on farms and on dairy farms and wanted to be dairy veterinarians. They came to the University of Minnesota and College of Veterinary Medicine and went back to the dairy farms and were dairy veterinarians. The numbers of students who choose large animal medicine is decreasing. But the good part for Minnesota is we still have lots of students who are interested in dairy, swine, and in the avian area. This present year, we have 38 students who have chosen the dairy elective. And that means they have a serious interest in dairy veterinary medicine. But it's an area of great concern, and we've done two things so far to help ensure our pipeline. One is working with the College of Agriculture. We've developed an early decisions program. So a student who enters the College of Agriculture as an animal science major, if they declare that they want to be a food animal veterinarian and they do well in their first year in the College of Agriculture, we will look at their grades, we will interview them, determine that they really are seriously interested in food animal veterinary medicine. And if all that turns out to be true, we'll provisionally accept them into the College of Veterinary Medicine after just 1 year as an undergraduate. They have to do two more years in animal science, and assuming they do well, they will fast track into the College of Veterinary Medicine. And at present, I think we have 20 students who are in that pipeline, and a growing number each year who are in that pipeline. The other thing that we've done is we produced some promotional materials, and we're working with the Farm Bureau, because the Farm Bureau has members, of course, in every county in Minnesota. And we're working with the Farm Bureau to get these promotional materials out to junior high and high school students. And they relate to, you know, what a wonderful career it still is to do large animal veterinary medicine. So we're working on both ends of the pipeline. We're working with young students in Minnesota to encourage them to consider veterinary medicine, food animal as a career. And then we have what I think is a very successful program with the College of Ag, a fast-track program which we call VetFast.
Thank you.
Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just going back a little bit to the energy thing you were talking about, and Chairman Hilty's here, and Chairman Hilty introduced a bill this week that has research funding components in there, taking money from Renewable Development Fund that Xcel Energy is paying $16 million a year into as part of the agreement to continue to produce energy from the nuclear sources. In that proposal, in the bill, there's funding that is recommended to be taken from there, and also some funding from the general fund too. But to look at really what road we're going to go down in a research thing, and I think you'll see portions of the bill as we discuss that later on, talking about competitive grants to the University of Minnesota with the IRE program, competitive grants possibly to MinSQ when we look at Mankato and University of Minnesota Morris also. Work is going on there, and also AURI, who we have testified earlier this week. And we're trying to find a way, I think, as we look at this, when we're sitting here trying to figure out how we approach the research program and how we study the various technologies. And I strongly encourage us to continue to be technology neutral, so we don't get into, well, as an enzymatic-based ethanol production the best way, as Boeing Companies is going into Iowa and doing, or is the gasification or Fischer-Tropsch process, the thermal energy process, the way to go. I don't think anyone really knows that. We have some of the mad scientists over at the U of M working on all of these, and I've been over talking to them in the last couple months as we put together this bill that Chairman Hilty's carrying. And I can tell you that they're very excited about this, and for the first time they've said in the long careers many of them, some of them have had, the folks over at the engineering departments over there and are working with the St. Paul campus for the first time in their recollection they have. So I think I would still encourage us to stay technology neutral. Let's let the research sort that out. Let's stay product neutral. We've had a lot of excitement about prairie grasses here and wood and everything else, everything you can think of. I would encourage our committee, Chair Hilty's committee, to focus on staying product neutral. That'll sort itself out as we go. I think it would be a huge mistake for the state of Minnesota to go down the road of our favorite technology today or our favorite product today and that not be the road that, in the end, is the right way to go. So I think it's very important in our role as state legislators to stay neutral on those sort of things and continue the effort there. And I'd like to see more money put in. I really would. And another comment to Dr. Klessner, our earlier testimony we had this week about your facilities, they're very, very positive about the work your veterinary, especially your veterinary diagnostic lab does, and the work I see out there in my area of the state working on this. There was some concern, frankly, about the resources there. Are they going to be adequate as we go down the road? And Representative Stolberg brought up a good point when we look at the biosecurity level 3 lab that we're putting here in, and frankly the only one outside of Beltsville, Maryland, Representative Stolberg, the only one here in the Midwest. It's important that we have the opportunity to have rapid responses to these things that pop up, because they come up fast, and we've got to be, I think, on the forefront. And that's one reason to support it. The other reason is, as you talked about earlier, to get grants from institutions like the National Institutes of Health and that sort of thing, that really help us fully utilize these lab facilities.
And Representative Magnus, I think, brings about another point, which I think is very important to the folks sitting around this table, Hilty and Peterson and Solberg and everyone, as we consider there's a lot of pots of money sitting around right now, and it's almost like a flock shoot when we try and figure out what which direction it's going here. I mean, we're talking about the Ag Special today and what the role of the university might be, but then we have the XL Energy Funds, which actually in the governor's bill were introduced in the Commerce Department, and Representative Hilty has them in his bill. We've got a $90 million initiative sitting in the Agriculture Department for research and grants and discovery. We've got our ethanol monies, which are coming offline, and we're going to try and discover what we can do with them. So we've got all these pots of money, and I think it behooves us to try and coordinate efforts here so that we are all commonly doing what's best for the state as a whole. And I think that's our challenge this year, because things are scattered around, and as we put these bills together, we have to realize we need to work in conjunction. And then I'm not even bringing in the federal monies or private monies or others that are out there that we want to make sure we're in concert with also. So I think we have a challenge, folks, but I hope we come out with a good product at the end that addresses these things.
And that's a good point, Mr. Chairman. We heard testimony earlier this week that some of the commodity groups are putting significant funding out there too. So we have to look at, I think instead of looking at what's possible, probably look at what's practicable and see as we try to coordinate these efforts to do what's really right for the state, because in many of these cases, we've got one shot at this, and I'm concerned that we do it right and pull it off in the right way for the state.
Okay, we have two more here, then I'm going to try and move on to our other guests before we run out of time. Representative Poppy, and then we'll...
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Dr. Klassner, all of you for presenting today. But Dr. Klassner, it's kind of a follow-up to Representative Doty's questions about vet med. I just want to know, first of all, if 90 graduates is the right number of graduates per year.
Dr. Klassner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Poppy, we did an analysis, a work power study for Minnesota. It's not the easiest thing in the world to truly estimate how many dairy practitioners, how many swine practitioners, how many small animal practitioners we need because of the changing world, the changing landscape in veterinary medicine and in agriculture. But the analysis that we did suggested that we should be in very good shape in Minnesota, both on the companion animal side and the food animal side. And we looked out about 40 years. And so the 90 number is a good number, I think, for Minnesota, and it's the mix that we constantly have to keep working with to ensure that we have enough food animal veterinarians, we have enough veterinarians going into public health, we have enough veterinarians doing biomedical research. So it's really the mix rather than the number, but I feel very comfortable with the number of students that we have right now.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for a follow-up. And this will be for you and for the others, I guess. I'm just wondering about, I serve on higher ed, and we hear a lot about the cost of tuition and the amount of debt students face for a two-year or four-year education. So when you're talking about a PhD level or vet med level, I'm just wondering about if you've had some opportunity to talk to the students about how they're able to face that debt, or if you have a lot of opportunities for scholarships and grants and other sorts of help. And just to add on to that, when you talked about the early decision for those students, do they then get some financial incentive to stick with it in order to be able to eventually pursue their vet med?
Dr. Kroll.
Mr. Chair, Representative Poppy. They're very, very important questions. The issue of debt is a big issue for veterinary medicine. The average debt of our students now is about $90,000 when they graduate. So it will take them a long time to pay back that debt. And I can tell you, we do everything that we possibly can to keep our tuition as low as we can. The other thing that we've approached is, as you've said, is we work very hard, and we have a major initiative now to increase our scholarship funding. So we have almost $1 million in scholarship funding that we give out to our students, but we want to double that or triple that because of the significant debt. And the early decision program, what we do as far as helping those students, we provide them work during the summers, so that we can, again, stimulate their interest in food, animal, veterinary medicine, and give them an income source during the summers.
And just wondering about the PhD on the other side.
Well, Chair, thanks. Representative.
Dr. Levine?
Yeah. We have fellowships. We have teaching assistantships, research assistantships. Virtually every one of our graduate students that's in a PhD program is supported.
Thank you.
Representative Welty.
Thank you, Chairman Junkie. And to Dr. Levine, I've spoken with Dr. Claudia Neuhauser, who's working on that $125 million grant to the Department of Energy. And I was very pleased when I looked through the proposal that she was putting together that it was a very collaborative effort. And I know she had made the comments that it's brought different factions from the university together that hadn't been brought together before, and there's a lot of energy around that issue. My question to you is, we talk about IREE, and then there's also Dr. Neuhauser, who's working, and she's brought together a number of faculty, and I'm sure there are other facets within the university or other departments working on this. Have you ever brought these individuals together outside of applying for a grant in order to bring them together and to ask them what they could do collaboratively to do research in the area of biofuel production or just our renewable energy? Is there one specific entity that's going to be coordinating this in the future? Is it IREE? And then do you have a wish list so that that could kind of guide us in our decision making as to where those dollars should go? I, you know, want to preface this by saying that I agree with Representative Magnus and that we want to keep it as broad as possible so we don't limit where those dollars are going, but I also think that we need a roadmap as to where our dollars are going so that we can check back in with you in the future to know that those dollars were used well. So I guess I have two questions. Number one is, you know, is there a really an ongoing effort outside of the grant process that's going to bring people together at the University of Minnesota to coordinate this effort for renewable fuel production? And then the second is there a wish list that we can refer to, or would you consider putting one together?
Dr. Levine.
Chair, Representative. We meet, the IRE group has three deans that meet regularly. Now the Institute on the Environment, in which IRE is going to be under the auspices of, there's another director there, so we meet regularly. We have discussions around these efforts. But the DOE grant has brought together an enormous number of people, and we've been talking as deans about the fact that we have to take advantage of this, and we're starting right out with a celebration over even completing this grant. And, of course, we'd have a wish list, but I'd rather put it together for you later.
Okay. All right. Well, very good. We thank you, three deans, for being here, and we hope this is the beginning of a discussion, not the end of one. And we'll certainly be working closely with you over the next month or two as we try and discover the best way to write that ag special in particular. Thank you very much. Maybe we want to get, I don't know, maybe we should have entomology and swine come down together. And then we'll take care of you two folks, and Mr. Cuomo will end with you with a big bang, although we're not a lot of time. So, but we may have you back, too. Well, he'll drive all the way many times.
Through Wilmer.
Yes. We have Dave Ragsdale from the Department of Entomology and Peter Davies, I believe, from the, he's a layman chair of swine medicine. So, you know, please proceed. Realize, you know, about 5 minutes each is what we have allotted at this point in time. And we appreciate you being here. Introduce yourself for the tape.
Thank you, Chairman Junkie. My name is David Ragsdale. I'm a faculty member in the Department of Entomology at the University of Minnesota.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, representatives, I'm Peter Davies. I'm a professor of veterinary medicine, the College of Veterinary Medicine.
Okay.
And I'd like to ask permission to hand out a small brochure here.
Pages will take care of you.
Okay. What you'll be receiving shortly is a small brochure describing the biocontainment facility that I was, a lot of my work is conducted in. And this is the biosafety level 2, and now under construction, the biosafety level 3 building. And what it has in this brochure is a couple of highlights of things if you would, as you get it. I do want to highlight that this is a joint effort through the Minnesota Ag Experiment Station and operated and run by the Minnesota Department of Agriculture on the St. Paul campus. So it's another one of these wonderful relationships that state agencies have been able to develop with the University of Minnesota. And in reality, it's unprecedented. My colleagues that are in other institutions are frankly green with envy that we have these kinds of facilities, and they do attract research dollars. We have federal agencies calling us up saying, oh, I see you're working on garlic mustard biocontrol. And if you open that brochure up into the middle panel, that is an invasive plant in forest ecosystems that colleagues of mine at the Department of Natural Resources and myself and members at the Department of Agriculture, we hope to be releasing insects in this next fall that will help control this invasive plant in the forested ecosystem. So the College of Food, Agriculture, and Environmental Sciences, yes, we do deal with food crops, but we do deal with other environmental issues in the state. Purple loosestrife is an example of a plant that I've worked on for 15 years or so. The state of Minnesota used to spend about $150,000 a year controlling this plant in wetlands. Last year we used 1 pint statewide of the herbicide Rodeo in wetlands because we happened to release a small insect that I went and collected in Germany, did all the testing on, and it's throughout the state of Minnesota. And this will be in perpetuity. There will no longer need to be a herbicide used to control this plant in wetlands in the state of Minnesota. So these are the kinds of examples of the work that my lab is involved with and colleagues of mine in the Department of Agriculture and the DNR focus on. My current focus is, if you flip to the inside panel or on the back page, is soybean aphid. And it's positioned like this because on the opposite page you'll see buckthorn. I have research projects using insects to try to find insects in Europe that will feed on buckthorn so that we don't have to use, again, chemical controls to control buckthorn. But lo and behold, in 2000, soybean aphid got into the U.S. And this is an insect that in the state of Minnesota in 2003 probably cost Minnesota farmers about $250 million to control and crop loss. My lab has been extremely focused on this insect. It wouldn't exist in this country if we didn't have buckthorn because it requires buckthorn to overwinter. And so these are interrelationships of these biology and biological systems that my lab and others at the University of Minnesota are heavily involved in. We're trying to be preemptive in these. On the back page of that, you'll see the floor plan of the biosafety level 2 building, and then the future addition out there of the biosafety level 3. And all this means is that the biosafety level 2 contains insects or things that you could see. Biosafety level 3 contains pathogens and microorganisms that you can't see. And these are extremely expensive buildings to build, but they're extraordinarily valuable. This is the only facility in the north, in the upper Midwest. There's been reference in the past to a facility in Beltsville. There's one in California, a 20-some million dollar facility that actually is sitting in the dark because they don't have the money to operate it. And they have built it 5 years ago. They have not opened the doors. And, you know, kind of an incredible waste of money and talent and time. But in Minnesota, we have established these partnerships that I think are just marvelous and working fully. It's looking at the future and looking at current problems, and we're using such things as the Minnesota the Agricultural Rapid Response Funds to address these emerging needs. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome, Mr. Davies.
Mr. Chairman, Representatives, I'll just give you a very brief outline of a specific research effort that's commenced in the last year that was really been made possible through the Rapid Agricultural Response Funding. Firstly, I've circulated a document that gives you some bullet points of the background, what I'll briefly go over. The problem we're working on is got the name of porcine circovirus-associated disease. First thing, infectious diseases are extremely important in the pig industry. They're probably the most difficult problem we face because of the impact that they can have. It's very unpredictable, even in the face of good management. Perhaps the most difficult part within that is the emergence of new diseases, so things we've never seen before on the earth in some cases, which appear apparently out of nowhere, and you're familiar with the SARS example, mad cow. Well, the pig industry's had the same issues over the last 10 to 20 years. The two predominant ones are the PRRS virus, which Dr. Klausner spoke about, and now more recently the circovirus-associated disease. I was tempted to join the University of Minnesota 3 years ago from I was working in New Zealand, largely because it's one of the few places where there's a critical mass of faculty in the diagnostic laboratory and in basic applied research that have internationally recognized expertise in swine health.
I had a suspicion you didn't grow up here in Minnesota.
Very perceptive, Mr. Chairman. Enjoying that group, most of their recent work had been on PERS, which has been estimated to cost the US industry of the order of $600 million a year. Circovirus appeared firstly in Canada in the mid-1990s, and at that stage, even though the virus was in the United States, very little or only mild disease, it caused very severe epidemics in many European countries, and late in 2004 caused a devastating epidemic across most of Quebec in the swine industry. A year later, commenced in North Carolina and had enormous impact in mortalities of growing pigs in North Carolina, and over the last year has spread to other areas in the US. We've done is through interaction with our colleagues in swine practice and in the industry, sat down as a group of swine disease researchers and mapped out a number of projects which address many of or several of the many questions about this new disease that aren't well understood. Through time, those objectives are listed for you on the back of the handout I've given you. I don't think we've got time to get into them. I'd just like to point out that this has been a collaborative effort with people across disciplines. It's involved veterinarians in industry, some of whom are active collaborators in some of the research objectives, and really without the availability of the rapid response funding, I don't think we would have been able to assemble this group of people to shift their focus from what they're already doing to an urgent problem in the industry. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you again for your presentation. Dr. Davies, I have a question. Does the state of Minnesota have a pig geneticist, somebody who's just studying genetics? And is that something that we should have? And if is that something that we'd be working toward having?
Dr. Davies.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Poppy. To my knowledge, not within the university system, though I would have to say outside our own college it's possible, but I think the changes in the industry over the last 20 years have really changed the way people source their genetic stocks. I was previously a faculty member at North Carolina State there, where we still had an extension genetics position, and that person was an active research and a good extension person, but the flow of genes and the process of genetic improvement in the industry has shifted so much towards major breeding stock companies that the role of I think traditional animal science departments in genetic improvement has really changed a lot, and that's not a common discipline now, I think.
Okay, thank you very much for coming and sharing with us. It's helpful as we make our decisions. Mr. Cuomo. We have Greg Cuomo coming down from our Research and Outreach Center. I believe he's out in Morris, but he's also going to answer our Umore Park questions. Thanks for coming. Welcome to the committee. Introduce yourself for the tape, and please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Greg Cuomo, and I was at Morris at Umore Park in Rosemont. And I have a few prepared remarks, but I also had, there was a number of questions you had, so I'll sort of turn it over to you if you'd like to hear my remarks, or if you'd like to ask questions about energy and Umore Park, we can do that either way.
Well, why don't we start with the Umore Park? That's fresh on people's minds. What are the plans for that down there? Relocation of research facilities, particularly for poultry, and then, of course, the field-sized test plots that are down there.
We have visited with turkey producers. They came down there for Thanksgiving. We also have some...
It's appropriate.
Right. I just called it Kiss a Turkey Day.
Yeah.
No, it's something we do, but we did initiate some discussions with them. We're going to have some discussions with deans that were up here today, Deans Levine, Durgan, and Klausner, and looking forward to seeing how we can move forward with the industry to continue our commitment with turkey growers. In terms of plot research, you know, there's a few different things going on here. One is the 25-year plan that we have to develop Newmore Park. I think that certainly in any kind of short term, there's no threat of not being able to do plot research, large or small plot. We are working with some of the DNR land. We also have been exploring some mutual interests with Flint Hills and some of their buffer lands. We also have a number of other sites throughout the state, so we'll do our best to keep all the plot research that we need to, and we recognize the advantage of being close to campus and do it, but the university has a huge system to be able to support that, and I don't think that any research will go undone in our university for a lack of land.
Okay, well, we'll be keeping up particularly on the poultry facility. I think that's a real concern. There are other plots of land around, but that is the only university poultry research facility.
Mr. Chairman, we do recognize that, and that's why, you know, we say we're sort of working on these things, but we've sort of taken that to a higher level because we do recognize that is the sole turkey research facility in the system.
If you want to give us a thumbprint on research activities now from your remarks or otherwise, and then we may have you back too at some point as we get more specific.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. I guess really what I'd like to say, a lot of the things were touched on by your questions. You know, renewable energy isn't just one thing. It's a whole host of things. We don't really know exactly where it's going and what the outcomes will be. And I think we both have to look as a university, we look at the problems that we're facing today and how we move forward and keep that industry going. We heard there's logistical challenges, just how we harvest, move, process biomass and some of those kind of things. There's real questions about whether gasification and fermentation are the right processes. I think the university, you know, needs to be keeping those things in line, but they also need to be looking to the future. You know, a few years ago, we didn't really talk about renewable energy very, very seriously. They thought it was sort of interesting, but not really applicable, and times have really changed. So it's really important as a university that we both focus on the problems of today, but look out into the future and some of those things in renewable energy. And we do have quite a diverse effort, and we do have a number of colleges and universities. Someone asked about how we get together. I think that grant was really the response of getting together. I mean, it's getting faculty together with different interests, and I think around energy is something that a university has really done to make that a reality. And like I said, I've got more stuff, but time's running short, and we have things. I think almost every outreach center, obviously including Morris, is involved with this. A number of different colleges. It's really a collaborative effort with huge benefits. I will say one last thing, and that is that I came here, it's been 10 years since I've been in Minnesota, but it's exciting to see the innovation of the citizens, the businesses are getting around it, the legislature, you know, before it really became quite as hot a topic as it was today, came behind the university. The university's moved forward, and it's really paid some dividends. I think Minnesota is really a top state in renewable energy. I don't think anybody has the breadth of work that we do, and we're glad as a university to be able to be part of that, and thank you for your willingness to help us do that.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Cuomo? Thank you for joining us. We appreciate it. And like I say, we know you're close by if we need some more information, and hope you'd join us. Any other questions or business for the committee members? With that, next week preview, Tuesday will be Dairy Day here, and we'll be hearing the Dairy Investment Tax Credit bill that day. And Wednesday is ethanol pricing, so that should be an interesting little discussion. With that, meeting is adjourned.